Les grands événements du Collège de France.
Okay, then, yeah, good morning everyone, and welcome to the second lecture of this lecture series on network design problems. So the topic of today's lecture will be the bidirected cut relaxation for Steiner tree. And so, let me start with a brief recap with reminding you what the Steiner tree problem is about. So this is one of the most important network design problems with many applications. So in Steiner tree, maybe let me draw a picture here. We are given some graph, G, vertices, and edges. So there is a graph G with vertices and edges. And then you can already see that there are two types of vertices here. Namely, we are also given a subset of the vertices, which we'll call the terminals. This is R, subset of V. And this is what I will always draw as these squares in the picture. So the terminals, the set R, consists of these four squares, and the other vertices are the non-terminals, sometimes also called Steiner nodes. And then we also have costs on the edges. So there is a cost function assigning every edge some non-negative cost. And then our task is, what we want to do in the Steiner tree problem is to connect all these terminals together in the cheapest possible way. So for example, a solution could consist of, say, buying maybe these edges. So our goal is to connect the terminals. The other vertices might be connected, but don't have to be connected. So we can use them, but we don't have to. So our task is to find a minimum cost subset F of the edges, that's the yellow subset in the picture, which is connecting R. And so this is the Steiner tree problem, it's a hard problem. And so maybe just one remark about this, what we can always assume, and what will sometimes be convenient, is that we can assume that G is actually a complete graph. So we have an edge between every pair of edges, and we can assume that C is actually some metric, so it satisfies the triangle inequality. If this is not the case, I mean, we can always insert an edge between any two vertices, just giving it as cost, just the length of the shortest path between these two vertices, and then I could, basically get a metric, and whenever I use such an artificial edge in my solution, I can in the end replace it back by the shortest path in the original graph. So this is an assumption that we can always make without loss of generality. And so now what we want to look at is linear programming relaxations for this problem. And we'll be looking at LP relaxations, linear programming relaxations. And let me first, so LP relaxations are quite important, first of all in the context of approximation algorithms, but they also have other applications, so they often use as the starting point for exact methods like integer programming methods and so on. And the reason why we study these LP relaxations is that LP relaxations can be solved typically in polynomial time, whereas the Steiner tree problem is hard and we cannot solve this exactly. So let me, before I introduce the bidirected cut relaxation, let me first introduce again, already seen last time, the kind of most natural LP relaxation that you would probably write down for this problem, for the Steiner tree problem, and then we can later see how we can strengthen this. So the LP relaxation has a variable for every edge in the graph, and then we minimize the sum over all the edge costs. So we have this variable xe indicating whether we include the edge in our solution or not. We minimize the total sum of the edge costs, and then we have some constraints. And one of the constraints will be that whenever I have a subset u of the vertices, where I have at least one terminal inside and at least one terminal outside, then I know that I need to pick my solution. We'll have to include at least one edge kind of crossing the set u. So among these edges, going from inside U to outside U, I will have to pick at least one edge. So this is, I will denote by delta of U, these edges going out of the set U. And I will need to, my Steiner tree will have to include at least one of these edges. So what I can put as a constraint is that x of delta of u should be at least one. And now I can impose this constraint for every subset u of the vertices for which u contains at least one terminal. So u intersected r is non-empty, but also there's at least one terminal outside. So r without u is also non-empty. And then we also have non-negativity constraints saying that our variables should be all non-negative for every edge E in the graph. So this is like the probably most natural linear programming relaxation that one would write down for the Steiner tree problem. It has an exponential number of constraints, but one can nevertheless solve it in polynomial time. And because this is the relaxation of the problem, so every actual Steiner tree corresponds to an integral solution of this thing here by simply setting xe to 1 whenever the edge is included in my solution and setting xe to 0 otherwise. We know that the value of this LP, so the value of this optimization problem, what we get out here, is always a lower bound on the cost of my optimum solution. So opt here, this will always denote the optimum Steiner tree. And so the best possible LP solution can only be cheaper than this. It might be the same, but it can certainly only be cheaper because we are optimizing over a larger set here. And then the thing that we will be interested in, so this, the LP value always gives us a lower bound, and what we'll be interested in is like how good is this lower bound? And so we are interested in by which factor can these things differ at most, and this is what we call the integrality gap. So here is what we call the integrality gap. This is the maximum factor by which they can differ. Okay. So this is what integrality gaps are in general, also for such linear programs. And one thing that one can observe about this LP, also been discussing a bit already on Monday in the lecture, is that the integrality gap of this linear program is exactly 2. And it's actually 2 even in the special case where every vertex is a terminal. So even then, and this is like, this special case is kind of special case of the minimum spanning tree problem, which is actually an easy problem to solve. And nevertheless, this LP relaxation has already a gap of 2. So the inequality gap of this LP here, of the LP, is 2. And this is true even for r equal to v. So this special case is the minimum spanning tree problem. And this is generally an easy problem to solve, which we can solve exactly in polynomial time. So this is, in some sense, this is a little bit disappointing. This is not a very good LP because, first of all, it only gives us a factor 2, and then it's even bad for this very simple problem of minimum spanning trees, which we can actually solve exactly and which is not even hard. So Now the question is, are there better relaxations? Can we come up with better LP relaxations for the Steiner tree problem? And one such relaxation, which is fairly natural, I will come to this now, and which has been studied for quite a while, for several decades, is the bidirected cut relaxation. And we will talk more about this. Okay, so now we want to look at stronger relaxations, and in particular about the bidirected cut relaxation. Okay. And to explain how the bidirected cut relaxation works, we will basically first look at the slightly different but equivalent way of phrasing the Steiner tree problem, which in an integral sense won't change anything. So what we will do is we will take every edge E in our graph and bidirect it, which means we will replace it by two directed edges in both opposite directions. Each of these new directed edges will simply have the same cost as the original edge. So this is like where the name bidirected comes from. We just bidirect every edge. Then we will fix an arbitrary terminal and call this the root, R. Doesn't matter which one we pick. And now the way we want to look at our Steiner tree problem is that instead of looking for some undirected tree, so instead of looking for just some tree that connects all our terminals, we will actually be looking for a directed solution, which is basically the same thing, except that all the edges should now point towards the root R. So that's the thing. So basically, instead of looking for an undirected Steiner tree, we are now looking for something where all the edges are pointing towards the root R. In some senses, it hasn't really changed the problem much, because I can always, whenever I have a solution for the classical Steiner tree problem, I can always choose the orientations such that all the edges point towards the root R. This won't change my cost. And on the other hand, if I have such a directed solution, I can always get back to an undirected solution by just forgetting the orientation. So in some sense, I haven't really changed the problem. There is, so far, not much has happened. But there is a reason why we've done this. And the reason is that if we now write down the natural linear programming relaxation for this directed version, this will actually become different and it will actually become stronger. So let me write this down, what the bidirected cut relaxation, or it's sometimes also called BCR, is. So we are now working in this bidirected graph instead of the undirected one. We will minimize the sum over all the directed edges. So we'll put an arrow there to indicate that our edges are directed. We sum again over all the edge, cost of all the edges that we are including. And we have some constraints, and we will also require that XE is non-negative for all directed edges. And so what kind of constraints do we want? So what we'll do is whenever we have a subset U of the vertices, where I have at least one terminal inside, but my root vertex R is outside, then I know that my solution will have to contain some edge going from inside U to outside U. So if I look at all the edges going out of U, which I will denote by delta plus of U, then I know that I have to pick at least one of these edges. So I can write this down as a constraint. So if I look at the total x value on the edges going out of U, this must be at least 1 whenever U is a subset of the vertices but does not contain the root, and U contains at least one terminal, so U intersected R is non-empty. Question, yes? I mean, it's still, we will still, if the problem is feasible, we will still always find, there's still always a feasible. So if the original standard tree instance is feasible, then, I mean, because we always include it in our graph always contains both directions of the edge, then there also always exists a feasible directed standard tree here. Because we can just take any solution that we have, the solution we know that exists for the original problem, and we can then choose the orientation such that they point towards, all the edges are pointing towards the root, and then this will correspond to a feasible solution to this bidirected linear program, simply by setting, again, for each of my edges in my directed solution, the variable xe to 1 and setting all the other ones to 0. So this is still a relaxation. So in particular, the value of BCR will still be a lower bound on the cost of my optimum solution. It's still a relaxation. So this is still true. It is still a relaxation for the whole thing, and we can again ask for the question, what is the integrality gap of this? Maybe one remark here about this root R that we pick here. It totally doesn't matter which root we pick. And in fact, one can prove that the value of this bidirected cut relaxation is even independent of the choice of the root. So if I look at an instance, it doesn't matter which root I pick. I will always get the same value of this relaxation. Okay. And so now the question is, so this is this. Now we have this directed relaxation, and the question is, how good is this? And in fact, one can show, this is kind of well-known, follows from well-known work by Edmonds and Falkerson, 1960s and 70s, that if R equals V, so if every vertex is a terminal, so this is the minimum spanning tree special case, then actually the value of BCR is equal to the Steiner tree cost, or I could also say it's equal to the minimum spanning tree cost. I mean, this is all. In this case, we're in a special case of minimum spanning trees. So this is also one motivation of coming up with this directed formulation, is that we know that for this special case of minimum spanning trees, which should be easy, this is actually an exact description, and we actually get an integrality gap of 1 in this special case. In this case, it's really a polyhedral description, yes. This is like exactly describing the convex hull of instance vectors of spanning trees. So this is like for the special case of spanning trees, this is all like well known that this is the exact polyhedral description. But now, of course, the question is, how good is this bidirected cut relaxation for Steiner trees? So for spanning trees, it's very good. Our integrality gap went from 2 all the way down to 1 by introducing these bidirected edges. But what happens for Steiner trees? And relativity gap of BCR for a Steiner tree. And so what do we know? The best known lower bound that we have is that the integrality gap is at least 6/5. And this is due to Vicari from 2020. So we know that the integrality gap is at least 1.2. This is a quite non-trivial construction. So this is like not a simple example that we could simply write down here. But that's the best known lower bound that we have. There have been weaker lower bounds before, but currently it's 1.2. And in terms of upper bounds, So for a long time, we didn't even know whether this is bidirected cut relaxation for Steiner tree is better at all than this undirected relaxation. So it was open, is this even better than a factor of two? So this was unclear. And yeah, a few years ago, 2 years ago, we could finally prove this. So in some joint work with Jarek Birke, Fabrizio Grandoni, and in 2024, we could prove that, yeah, the inequality gap is better than 2, so it's at most 1.9988. And in the meanwhile, together with my student Paul Paschmans, we could improve that further and prove that's actually quite significantly below 2, so it's below 1.9. Well, this is work together with Paul Paschmans, and this is very recent work from just this year. Okay, and so what I want to do, the remaining part of the lecture today, is explain you basically the ideas, the high level ideas that we need to prove, high level strategy that we follow to prove this 1.9 upper bound on the integrality gap. Okay. Yes.
Just a question about comparing the relaxed problem and the original problem. Here the comparison is always made about energies, right?
Sorry?
About the costs.
Yeah, it's all costs. Yeah.
Are there some more qualitative comparisons in terms of the quality of solutions?
Here the objective is really just like always minimizing the length and the cost, so that's always what people compare.
Because with relaxation, how many of 0 ones do you get?
Okay, now I see what you get. Yeah, I mean, one can say something about how many non-zeros one gets in there, so there are results about sparsity, basically. That's true then. Once this is more difficult, it depends a bit on the structure. So otherwise, yeah. I mean, then you need to get into, kind of things like rounding algorithms and seeing how they can be useful in algorithms. But here it's like the focus is just on getting a good lower bound. But there are definitely results on sparsity. This is, for example, also something that's heavily exploited in this this two approximation algorithm by Jane that I was mentioning. The last lecture on Monday, the proof of the analysis of this heavily exploits the structure of actually the zeros and non-zeros there, and there are quite some things that one can say, yeah. Okay, good. Any questions before we start discussing how we prove the 1.9? Okay, good. Okay, then, So in order to prove that the inequality gap is not too large, the somehow most difficult part to prove is that we kind of need to show that our relaxation cannot cheat too much, so we need to prove that the value of this bidirected cut relaxation is somehow large. And it cannot be too much smaller than the cost of an optimum solution. And the way we typically do this, so we want to be interested in lower bounds on the value of BCR, and the way we typically do this is by looking at dual solutions, so solutions to the dual problem of BCR. So what we are interested in is proving lower bounds on the value of the bidirected cut relaxation. And for this, we will be looking at the dual of BCR. So let me write down how the dual looks like. So the dual is a maximization problem. In the dual, we will have variables yu for subsets u of the vertices. So in the primal, we have constraints for subset of the vertices. So in the dual, we will have variables for subsets of the vertices. And then we'll sum over all the subsets of the vertices, the sum yu over all the subsets of vertices that do not contain the root, but that do contain at least one terminal. So this condition is coming from the condition we have here. We maximize over this. And then as constraints, we'll have some packing constraints. Namely, we'll have that all, if I sum over all the, if I look at some HE, let me first draw the picture. So if I look at some HE, and if I then look at all the subsets where E is outgoing, so all the subsets that E is leaving, and I sum up their YU value, then this should sum up to no more than the cost of E. So all the edges subsets U, such that E is an outgoing edge of U, if I sum up their YU values, then this should pack into, this should be no larger than the cost of the edge. And this should be true for each of my directed edges. So this is the dual here. Maybe one remark, one little bit unusual thing I've done here. I've included variables YU for all the subsets, even for those for which we don't have a constraint here in the final. This will somehow be useful. It's sometimes convenient in describing the algorithm later on, but these variables that never appear in the objective, you could always set them to zero if you want to. But otherwise, this is just really writing down the dual of this linear program. And just from duality, what we know from standard duality, we know that the value of the dual is equal to the value of BCR. This is just standard duality. And this gives us that if I take any feasible solution to this dual problem, this will give me a lower bound on the value of BCR. So if I take any feasible solution that satisfies these constraints, but is not necessarily optimal, it will at least give me a lower bound on the value of BCR. So every feasible dual solution yields a lower bound on BCR. And this is how we will derive lower bounds on the value of BCR by constructing good dual solutions. Good. Okay. So that will be our high-level strategy. We want to construct good solutions to this dual problem in order to get good lower bounds on the value of BCR. And so let me explain you now how this construction of dual solution works. So how do we construct dual solutions? And so, in this recent work together with Paul Peschmans, we'll do this in two steps. And the first step is that we will fix what we will call a merge plan M. I will explain you in a moment what this is. And then the second step will be, given this merge plan, I will use this to construct the dual solution. Solution from this given merge plan M. So this is the high-level structure of the proof. We have two steps. So let me, first, maybe before I get into these steps, let me explain you what a merge plan is. So here is basically the definition. What is a merge plan? So a merge plan, I write this as ST for t greater or equal than 0. So I will have some st for every time. Think of t as being some time, being for every time greater or equal than zero, I will have some ST. And ST will be a partition of the terminals. So for every time t greater or equal than zero, I will have a partition ST of my terminal set. So this should be a partition of the terminal. So you can think of the merge plane basically as a partition of the terminal sets that's kind of evolving over time. That's the way to think about this. And what happens, and this is why this is called a merge plane, is that this partition shouldn't evolve in any wild way, but this partition will become basically coarser and coarser. So things will just only merge over time. So what I want is that if I have times t1 less or equal than t2, then st1, this is the partition, this should be a refinement of my other partition st2. So, and then, And then finally, what we want, what we also want, is that eventually this partition becomes the trivial partition, so where all the terminals are merged together and we just have a single set. So what we want is that there exists some time t such that the partition only contains one element. So, or in other words, I could also say this is basically equivalent to saying that ST just becomes the trivial partition containing just the one set R, so all the terminals are merged together. They are all just one set. So this is what we call a merge plane. Okay, any questions about this definition before we move on to explaining what happens in these two steps? Okay, so what I will do is I will first start by explaining step two. So just let's assume we have this given merge plan, which somehow comes out of the step one. And then I will show you how we can use such a merge plan to construct a dual solution, so a solution to this dual linear program. And then we will also see a little bit of kind of what properties we want from this merge plan. And then we can go into step one and see how we should actually choose this merge plane in the first place. Okay, so let's start with step two. And so if you're familiar with, in case you're familiar with kind of primal dual algorithms for network design problems, there's always this dual growth procedure. The step two will be somewhat similar to this. So it's somewhat inspired by what's happening there. But don't worry if you've never seen this before. Won't rely on this. So what we'll do is we will start with the dual solution that's just zero completely at time t equals zero. So we start at time t equals zero. Our dual solution is zero. This is always the feasible solution. It satisfies our constraints. All the variables are non-negative. And certainly whatever I sum up here on the left-hand side is zero, so it's certainly less or equal than the cost of the edge. It's not a very good dual solution, but it's certainly always feasible. And we will at any time, so now over time, we will maintain always a feasible dual solution y, which will become better over time. And so what we do is that at any time t greater or equal than zero, we will grow. So this is a somewhat continuous process here. We'll grow dual variables YUS at speed one for all sets S in our current partition, where US is some set with the property that S is contained in US and US is some subset of the vertices. So let's digest this. So at every time t greater or equal than 0, I have my current partition of the terminals. So this is coming from my merge plan. That's what my merge plan is giving me. And then for each part of my partition, for each set S in here, I will choose some set US. I haven't specified how I choose this exactly, but it will certainly be a set that contains S and is a subset of V. And I will grow the corresponding dual variables YUS. And this will just grow at speed one. And then and that's just growing at speed one. And at some point in time, this is a continuous process. At some point in time, this partition might change or these sets US might change, and that can happen. Okay? So that's what we want to do. And this fully describes the thing, except that I haven't told you how we choose the set US. So what's the choice of US that we make? The way we choose the set US is basically we will choose US with this property and choose US as small as possible such that growing US won't destroy dual feasibility. That's the plan. So it's US will be the smallest set S, the smallest set that contains S, such that Y US can be increased. And can be increased means can be increased without violating dual feasibility. So let's think a little bit about what does this mean? How does this set look like? So if I have a set US, say if this would be my set US, and if I have some outgoing edge E, can I increase the dual variable of, then like if my edge E is a tight edge, this means that my corresponding dual constraints is satisfied with equality, then I shouldn't increase the dual variable corresponding to YS any further, because otherwise I would violate this inequality. So if E is tight, this means that the sum of all the sets U, such that E is in delta plus of U, YU is equal to the cost of E, then we cannot increase YUS. And this is basically the only reason for why we could possibly not increase the value of a set YUS, because I might have a tight outgoing edge, and if I have a tight outgoing edge, I cannot increase the dual value of YUS, because otherwise I would violate the corresponding constraint. And this is why the reason why the correct choice of US, if we want to have this property, is that I will choose US as the set of all vertices that are reachable from my set S. So S is somehow, S are somehow these terminals inside. So all the vertices V that are reachable from S by a path of tight edges. Very good question. So far, with this definition, it could also contain other terminals. We will actually make sure that it doesn't contain other terminals. So this will actually be crucial in the analysis. I will get to this. But very good question, exactly. Yeah. So far, if I just describing step two, if I just given any arbitrary merge plan, it could happen. But we'll later choose the merge plane such that it doesn't happen. Exactly. So this now describes the algorithm. So at any time, I start with y equals 0, and then at every time, any time t, I look at all the sets in my partition, every set s in my partition of the terminals. For each of them, I look at the corresponding set us, which is all contains all the vertices that are reachable from s by a path of tight edges. And then the dual variable corresponding to yus, this will grow. And I grow this kind of simultaneously for all sets s in this partition. And then at some point, possibly new edges become tight, which might change my sets us, or maybe also my partition changes. But this is just a continuous process kind of running over time. Okay, so what can we say about this process? So basically, by construction, what we can say is that by construction, it will always yield a feasible dual solution. Like at some point, yeah. At some point, we can stop. We'll stop the process at some point when we only have one element, the partition. But it will certainly become, it will always be a feasible dual solution, because just the way we constructed these sets, chose these sets YUS, we can never violate these dual constraints. So it's always feasible. This is kind of just by construction. So this dual growth procedure, this dual growth process yields a feasible dual solution, and this actually holds for any merge plane M. So for feasibility, it doesn't matter at all how our merge plane looks like. It's just always feasible by construction. And so the question, the big question here is like, what is the value of the dual solution that we produce? So how large is the value? And the value is this sum over all the sets U that do not contain our root R and that contain at least one terminal, YU. So how large is this value, which is the objective function of our dual linear program? Okay. And here it now becomes important that we are not summing over all subsets YU, all subsets U here, but we are only summing over some that certain those that satisfy certain requirements. So the second condition here is not very important, that we want the non-empty intersection, want to contain at least one terminal, because we are actually only growing sets that contain at least one terminal. Because whenever we grow a set, a dual variable corresponding to a set US, then this at least contains the terminals in S, and S is non-empty. So basically, every set dual variable YS, YUS that we grow corresponds to a set US that contains at least one terminal, namely the terminal from S. But the second condition is more important, the first condition here, namely that we are only interested in those sets that do not contain the root. And so let me write this thing here in a different, slightly different way. Namely, I want to write this as an integral over time. Namely, at any time I'm growing, basically, I'm just, if I'm interested in what's the total sum of my y variables, I'm just interested in how many sets am I growing at each time that correspond to this sum. And this is basically the number of sets in my partition, but I'm only allowed to count those for which the root is not contained in my set US at this time t. So this is basically a different way of writing this here. I'm basically counting at every time t how many sets am I growing, and I'm only counting those that actually contribute to the sum, which are only those for which US does not contain the root. And, yeah. Okay, so this is basically what our dual value is. So here, this not containing the root is really like the crucial part here that we need to be careful about. And now, yeah, I want to simplify this expression a little bit. And now I'm getting back to Chin Chung's question before. So what we will do, what our goal will be, or one of our goals will be for step one, is that we will choose the merge plan M in step one, such that in step two, we get the following property. So at any time T, we have that for every set in my partition, the terminals contained in US. So if I look at which terminals are contained in the set US, then these are exactly the terminals in S and no further ones. So this is kind of a property, yeah, that we'll have to want to guarantee. But this is something for which we need to choose the merge plan carefully such that this actually happens, so that we can guarantee this. And if we have this, that the terminals that are contained in the set US are exactly the terminals in S, then we can write this value of the dual solution slightly differently. So then we know that the value of the dual solution Y is just the number of, yeah, again, copying this integral here. So this is going from, yeah, T to zero time T zero to infinity. And here I can simply write the number of sets in my partition, of parts of my partition, minus one. And the reason is that here I had this condition that I was summing over I was counting the number of sets in my partition for which the root is not contained in US. But the root is only, I mean, remember that ST, this was a partition of the terminal set. So there's actually exactly one set S here in this partition that contains the root. And only this corresponding set US will also contain the root because of what the condition we have here. So basically, in order, yeah, for the second condition, the number, there's exactly one set that I basically need to subtract here because of this condition of not containing the root. So if we can make sure that our sets US contain only the terminals in S and not any other terminals, then this is the value of the resulting dual solution that we get. So this is kind of what we want to have as large as possible. But we want to make this as large as possible while simultaneously making sure that we have this property star here. And also let me do this, mark this here as double star. And maybe at that point, yeah, you can also make a remark about termination of the algorithm. So we can actually note that, I mean, we could run this dual process forever. So I've written this here as an integral going up to infinity. But for some time, at some point, that was one of the conditions of our merge plan, this size of ST will just become one, and then it will stay one because things can only merge. So actually, this is really a finite integral which will just stop at some time when the size of ST becomes one, and then we could also stop the dual growth procedure if we want to. Okay, good. Okay, any questions until here before I then get into the first step? Okay, So this is basically what happens in the second step. And now the question is, what can we do in step one? Where basically our goal is that we want to find a merge plan that guarantees us this property star. And at the same time, we want this value of our dual solution, which is then described by this double star. This should somehow be large. And so, yeah. So let's get to step one, which is about choosing the merge plan. And what I want to show you first is a simple way of choosing the merge plan, which shows you that the integrality, which basically you can use to prove that the integrality gap is at most 2. So this just as a baseline, and we can kind of see how one can improve on this. So, and this will be the canonical merge plan. Get some idea. So this canonical merge plan is what you can use to prove that the integrality gap is at most 2. That's not an impressive result, but just to kind of get some idea of how one can get this out of this proof strategy here. And so what is this merge plan? So we'll choose the merge plan with largest value. And so the value, this was this double star expression. Basically I just at any time I want to have as many parts as possible in my partition, such that the following condition is satisfied. So for every 2 terminals V and W, I want that V and W belong to the same part of my partition at time t equal to half the distance. So remember that, this is just the distance. Remember we see this was just a metric. It was a complete graph. So I could also write at any time t greater or equal than this. So as soon as V and W belong to the same part of the partition, they will stay part of the same part of the partition. And so basically I want to choose the merge plan with largest value, and then I specify for every pair of terminals at what time they should be merged at the latest. And then it's also not difficult to choose the merge plan with largest value, because basically I always want to have as many parts as possible. So I'll just keep vertices apart only whenever I have to merge some vertices, some terminals, because of this rule, then I will kind of put them together. That's basically what happens. So this is how this canonical merge plan looks like. If one works with this canonical merge plan, there are a few things that one can show relatively easily. So one thing that one can observe, there are some invariants that one can prove, namely that at any time t greater or equal to 0, these sets US will actually be just all the vertices that have distance at most t from the set S. And in particular, we will also have that the sets US that I'm growing at one time, they are all disjoint. So basically what happens here is that for this canonical merge plane, I'm basically growing balls around these sets. And they will be disjoint from each other. They will be disjoint from each other. I'm just growing these balls around these sets. And these they will be disjoint from each other, basically, because as soon as these balls would could possibly touch, this rule would kind of specify that they should be should get merged. So basically, I'm just growing these disjoint sets and these disjoint balls, and because they are disjoint, it's also not so difficult to prove that they are actually these kind of balls growing around the sets. And so they are all nicely disjoint. And in particular, my property star will hold. So this was this property that the set US does not contain any other terminals, because it's not even like, yeah, these sets are just completely disjoint. They don't even overlap in any vertex. So in particular, they will not overlap in the vertices, in the terminals. So this is, so what is happening here is really like, basically if you know standard primal dual for the undirected LP, this is basically mimicking this. Just for those of you who know this. But in some sense, like if you choose the merge plan like this, this is a fairly simple analysis. I will not get into the details, but it's not very difficult to prove that you get this property star here by basically proving these invariants that are there. And then, so this is like one fact about this canonical merge plan, that it's, yeah, you can fairly easily prove that this property star holds. And a second thing that one can prove is that if I look at the value of this canonical merge plan, then I can say that the cost of what we call a terminal MST, so a terminal minimal spanning tree, let me explain this. So this is just a minimum spanning tree on the terminals. So a minimum spanning tree in the graph induced by the terminals. So remember, we have a complete graph. And then I basically just forget about all these other vertices than the terminals. I just look at edges that go directly between my terminals, and I'm looking just for a solution inside there. So this is what would be a terminal minimal spanning tree. So a terminal minimal spanning tree is it's always some feasible solution to my Steiner tree problem. It's not necessarily the best one, but it's always some feasible solution. So the cost of this terminal minimal spanning tree turns out to be exactly twice the value of the canonical merge plan. Actually exactly this. So this is, yeah, it's not super difficult to prove. I will not get into the proof here, but basically if you think about how you would construct this merge plan here, you would basically always try to merge vertices together whenever you have to, and this is basically based on their distance. So in some sense, what's going on here is that this merge plan, this construction of the merge plan is very similar to Kruskal's algorithm for computing minimum spanning trees. So in fact, maybe as a vague hint, like why there is this connection, but it's also, yeah, it's not very difficult to prove. You could prove it on probably half a page that this is actually the same thing. There's nothing very deep behind this. And this then basically implies, yeah, that the integrality gap of BCR is at most 2, because we now have a one feasible Steiner tree, which costs at most twice the value of our dual solution. It could be that the cheapest Steiner tree is even cheaper than the terminal minimum spanning tree, and it could be that maybe the value of BCR is even larger than the dual solution that we've constructed, but this can only make things better. So we found some Steiner tree and some dual solution for BCR, which are only a factor of two apart from each other, and this is basically what we wanted to prove. So for proving integrality gap 2, of course we are not happy with integrality gap 2. But that's the strategy here. Okay. Then next thing, this was for, inequality gap 2, of course we want to do better. So next, let's look at what we call MST optimal instances. And these are instances where the terminal MST is an optimal Steiner tree. So this is just a special case of the Steiner tree problem, just those instances that are very simple to solve because the terminal spanning tree will be an optimal solution. These are instances where the Steiner tree problem is easy, but these were kind of the hard instances that we have to deal with if you want to prove that the inequality gap of BCR is better than 2. Then you have to deal with these instances where the terminal minimum spanning tree is an optimal Steiner tree solution. And what we'll do there is we'll choose the merge plan almost like the canonical merge plan, except that I will replace this 1/2 here by 7 over 6. So basically, 7 over 12, sorry. 7 over 12. So I will replace this 1/2 by a 7 over 12. So basically, I will merge terminals slightly later than before. So instead of merging them, whenever these at distance, at time which corresponds to half the distance, I'm now merging them slightly later. And the key challenge in the proof. What one has to prove here is that our property star is still satisfied, so that our sets still don't contain any terminals that it shouldn't contain. So we still want this property that the set US only contains the terminals in S. And this is now, if I don't choose this here as a 1/2, but as a 7 over 12, this is now becomes a highly non-trivial thing to prove. And this is kind of the most complicated part of the analysis, proving that this property is still satisfied. That's like the key technical part, which is quite involved. If you have that this property is satisfied, then you can basically get, in the same way as we've done this for this canonical merge plan, that the inequality gap is at most 12 over 7 for MST optimal instances. And then, so this is kind of how we choose the merge plan for these MST optimal instances. And we can, in fact, also show that in some sense, this is the best possible choice of a merge plan for this MST optimal instances. I mean, it's not clear for every individual instance, but we can show that if you just keep the second step as it is, you will not be able to get better in general, better dual solutions by choosing a different merge plan in step 1 for these MST optimal instances. So there is basically a theorem, which is again joint work with Paul Pashman, which is that for every positive epsilon, there exists an MSC optimal instance such that any merge plan and it doesn't even have to be a merge plan satisfying this property star, just any merge plan leads to a dual solution with value at most, wait, let me see, now I have 7 over 12 plus epsilon times, wait, 7 over 12, times the cost of opt. So basically, we cannot really improve on this factor. So even if we don't restrict ourselves to merge plans satisfying this property star, which is maybe useful for us, so it's just simply not possible to prove any better integrality gap bound than the 7 over 12 or this 12 over 7 by simply choosing the merge plan smarter for these MST optimal instances. And then, so this was about this MST optimal instances, and let me at the end also comment a bit on general instances, I'm not just interested in this. So what we do there the construction of the merge plan becomes a bit less simple. We cannot simply write down such a simple rule that is just based on the distance of the terminals. So for general instances, we need to be a bit more careful. So what we do is basically, and we can also not only compare always to a terminal minimum spanning tree anymore. So far we were just always comparing the dual solution to a terminal minimum spanning tree, but in general, a terminal minimum spanning tree might be a factor two off from the optimal solution. So we cannot really hope by just comparing to this to get like a good integrality gap bound. So what we there do is we basically construct a Steiner tree and a merge plan simultaneously. And so you can kind of think about this as basically like we start with our terminal minimum spanning tree, and we start, say, with our canonical merge plan, or with our merge plan now that we use for our MST optimal instances. But then we will, in certain regions of the graph, perhaps be able to improve our Steiner tree a bit, and then we will also simultaneously adapt the merge plan, and we can somehow prove, kind of construct these two things simultaneously. And then there are basically two things we need to show about this. First of all, we'll show that the merge plan that we get still satisfies our property star, so that we only contain the terminals. US only contains the terminal in S. And the other thing that we show is the cost of the Steiner tree that we construct will be at most 1.9 times the value double star of our dual solution. It's no longer sufficient. There's no easy way of simply writing down the definition of the merge plan like here, but we really have to construct the Steiner tree and the dual solution somehow simultaneously. So here we get a bound of 1.9. This theorem basically says we cannot hope for any better integrality gap bound than this 12 over 7 with this overall strategy. But one thing that's, for example, still open is, can we construct better merge plans for general instances. So possibly we could get about 12 over 7 in general by just constructing better merge plans. That might be possible, we don't know. And of course, yeah, the inequality gap of BCR might also still well be below 12 over 7, so the best lower bound is, as I mentioned, is 1.2 to 6 over 5, so there's still quite a gap. So possibly one could prove better bounds, but then the theorem shows we would need different strategies than just like using these merge plans, but we would need something else as strategy to improve there. But yeah, at least now we know that the inequality gap of BCR is really strictly better than 2, but really determining the inequality gap is still, there's still quite some work ahead of us, closing the gap between this 1.2 and the 1.9. Good, yeah, so let me stop here and thank you very much, and I'm happy to take questions if there are any further.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.